But that primitive brain, that brain that's activated first in any situation, is there to keep us safe. You know, that's the primary purpose of the brain, not to make you wise, not to, you know, create great things in life. It's to first keep you safe. So even when you walk into a room of people, your brain's saying, what is the safest place for me to sit? Uncertainty is a very unsafe place to be because I don't know what's going to happen. And so the brain is saying to you, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, one of the most powerful but simple questions that you can ask in coaching.
Welcome back to Empower Your Life show with me, Cindy Marie, the first episode of season 4. In this episode, join us on a profound and transformative journey as we explore crucial topics that can reshape your mindset and uplift your life. Our special guest will guide us through powerful questions, acting as catalysts for personal growth and aiding you in stepping beyond your comfort zone. She has been researching for how we learn and grow for over 40 years. But when she was introduced to coaching in 1995, she discovered the best way to change minds and lives, not only for the better, but for the best, with just one conversation. She has now taught coaching skills and consulted on creating coaching cultures for companies in 43 countries. She is the author of impactful books such as Outsmart Your Brain, Wonder Woman, The Discomfort Zone, Coach the Person and Not the Problem, and her new book, Breakthrough Coaching, which have appeared in business, coaching, and psychological publications worldwide. In between writing and researching, she puts on her hiking boots and heads into the mountains not far from her front door in Phoenix, Arizona, USA. We'll delve in into the essence of true leadership, offering actionable steps to commence your journey toward becoming the best version of yourself. Most significantly, we'll explore the art of embracing the unknown as a pathway to learning and growth. Empowering leadership, letting go of the past self with our next guest, Dr. Marcia Reynolds. Get ready for an insightful exploration. Let's dive in. Dr. Marcia, thank you so much for being here.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. So, Marcia, before we dive in, I love, and I'm super curious as always, I find it fascinating to have a conversation how our guests got their start, you know? Mm-hmm. And today's episode is all about letting go of the past self to empower not only ourselves, but also others as leaders. So before we dive into practical tools, tricks and trips, I would love to share with, for you to share with us a little bit of your journey, especially for those people perhaps new in coaching, and eager to learn from your journey that relate to letting go of the past self.
Yeah. You know, I at this point, you know, retrospect is always a great wisdom. And at this point, when I look back at the different paths that I've taken, I'm so appreciative that I was brought up in a way that it was fine to take risks, go out there and try things. And almost everything I've done in my life was just something showed up and I thought, well, that's interesting. Let me try it. Instead of, oh, well, I can't do that or I might fail. So even, you know, after graduate school, my first job was in a psychiatric hospital, but my first master's was broadcasting. So I was hired to push television sets around in this hospital, but it was for the training department. And at one point she decided to get her doctorate and she had fired the trainer. And so she dumped all the management and communication skills training in my lap. And I had never trained anything like that.
Wow.
But I said, I'll figure it out. And so what led me to my second master's in instructional design was that I have to start designing these programs because this is what's been given to me. And I need to know a little bit about what I'm doing. And so from there, at one point, they were making big changes in the hospital, and my boss was leaving, and they were putting me in another department. I didn't like it. So I stood up in a meeting, a professional meeting, and just said, you know, I need a new job. And the guy in front of me said, I have one for you. And it was interesting because it was for a computer company, so it was tech. Wow. Well, I knew nothing about computers, and this was like they were just coming out, you know, in the 80s. And I'm like, well, okay, I'll figure it out.
Wow.
You know, and so, and I ended up being the international product training manager for them, you know, just different steps and different things. When people would say, you know, we need this, it's like, well, I'll figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then when that company got sold and it was starting to not do well, I left. I tried to do some consulting, you know, it wasn't panning out as well. But then I got a job offer to run an entire training department with a company that they weren't sure was going to succeed. Mm-hmm. And they said, but you know what? Maybe the work you do would help us get over, you know, the bar. And we're open to whatever you think is right. And I'm like, okay, I'll try. Well, 3 years later, we were the top IPO, revenue producing IPO in the United States. But then they said, well, okay, we're done with your programs. Go fix the factory. And I didn't want to do that. And the day I resigned, somebody sent me this article about this new thing called coaching. Mm. And I said, well, that sounds interesting. So I called up and signed up for a coaching school. You know, I'll try that. It can't hurt. So it was 1995, and the timing was just perfect. So mm-hmm. it was those of us in the school that helped to create the International Coaching Federation and, you know, everything from that point. And I kept wanting, so because I was always doing training, I wanted to know, how do people learn and grow? How do they learn yeah. and grow? So I was always trying to learn this, go to seminars, workshops, but I ended up getting my doctorate in this new science called neuroscience.
Mm.
So I could figure out how coaching works. Now, I love to write and I love to share what I'm learning, and that's why I write so many books. You know, because I want to share what I'm learning. But I think it's always been that, well, that sounds interesting, I'll try it. That attitude that has helped me to keep moving forward so quickly, you know, and to accomplish things that are known around the world, mm-hmm. you know, because I never said, no, I don't think I'm good enough. I'm like, well, I don't know that I don't know how to do it, but I'll figure it out. So that was always, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's the mantra or the way you have this statement. Oh, that sounds interesting. Let mm-hmm. me try it. And that also reminded me Marie Folio, who created the book, Everything is Figureoutable. You know, no. That sounds the same, right?
Great title, yeah.
Yeah, and this actually led me to this very, very relatable question that mm-hmm. you have mentioned to keep moving forward. And as well, when I was doing researching on your work, I found something on your website that really connects on this next question. So it goes like this. I often found myself frustrated when training and advising others on how they could realize the changes they wanted to make for themselves. And when in conversations with others, they would commit to taking steps toward their goals, but then went back to old ways once it felt too difficult or awkward. So mm-hmm. because you mentioned, oh, that sounds interesting,
mm-hmm, yeah.
and then keep on moving forward. So my next question mm-hmm. to you is like, why do many leaders, you think, mm-hmm. Stick with their past selves, yeah. even when it doesn't bring them any joy, peace, yeah. fulfillment for the mm-hmm. long term that they truly desire?
Yeah. Well, you know, that truly is the difference between learning through reading, being trained, mentoring, is that we're only using the cognitive brain, which mm. doesn't change things. It doesn't change our stories. It just changes our actions. Mm-hmm. So I'm still the same old self trying, you know, something new. And if it doesn't feel awkward, I go back to the safety of the same old self. even if the same old self I know doesn't serve me to my best ability, I'm more comfortable in the safety of the same old self. That's not that effective, but it's more comfortable than I am in the safety of the unknown or the unsafety of the unknown. That the brain doesn't like uncertainty. It doesn't like to feel I can't do this or I'm not sure what will happen. And so when we try to figure things out on our own or we're just told what to do, we're not really changing our perspective of ourself as well as situation. And that's what's so great about coaching is coaching works in the middle brain, you know, in the where the creative process is. And so when I start to reflect what you're saying and you hear yourself thinking and then I ask you questions about that, it starts to make different connections in the middle brain, which defines myself and my situation differently. So if I see everything in a different way, not in the old way, but in the context of, wow, that's amazing. I never thought of that. That's a new insight, then what happens is I have even a little bit more confidence in moving forward instead of what somebody else has told me to do. So there's an entirely different process that goes on in the brain that gives us not just insight but confidence when we coach people. That's different from training, and I do a lot of training yet. But I know that if there's not coaching along with the training, it won't be that effective in making sustainable change.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I truly agree with what you're saying that when we don't shift our perspectives, the chance of moving forward to something that serves you will be tiny because we haven't changed our narrative. And I'm super curious. I'm guessing or assuming that by the time that you have sort of like discovery calls, I don't know if you have that, you would know if the person is coachable.
Well,
or is there a power of, again, questions?
Excuse me, I was going to sneeze. You know, coachability is an interesting thing. It's not a yes or no, is the person coachable or not? There's a range of coachability. On some occasions when somebody's told they have to be coached and they come there and they absolutely don't want to be there, don't even want to explore what value it could be for them, you know, they're just not engageable, then no, they're not coachable. You know, but if they come to the session, I don't know why I'm supposed to be here. I don't know what good this is. That doesn't mean they're not coachable. You know, so if I then ask the questions, well, would you be willing to explore how our time together could be useful to you? Not what they told you, you had to improve, but useful to you in the goals that you have. And oftentimes they start to open up, well, okay, let's take a look at what that might be. And then I can just, you know, so what's the most important to you now? You know, what would be awesome if you could create something different? But sometimes it's even just exploring their situation. So I had a gentleman come to me through a leadership program, and he said, I don't even know why they put me in this program. I don't want to be promoted into, you know, leadership. So I don't know that I'm coachable. He even had the language. And I said, so tell me what it is that you get the most out of the job that you do right now. And he says, oh, well, what mostly fulfills me is I've been here a really long time. And, you know, when I'm on teams, I love working with the younger guys and helping them to, you know, understand things more quickly. And I said, oh, so you work with others to help them see what they can do and their possibilities and have a greater understanding of the organization. He said, yeah. I said, do you see that maybe they see you as a leader? And he said, oh. I said, leader doesn't necessarily have to be a position. you know, a title.
Yeah.
But it seems like you stepped into that role. Would you like to explore how you might do that better? And all of a sudden he became coachable, you know? So I always say, be careful of judging that they're not coachable when they come. They just might be unsure and not understand coaching.
Yes.
You know, so stay with it and see what's important to them. And if there's anything that would be useful that they could improve in their current life situation right now.
Yes. And that actually brought me to the, when you even show up at that moment, it means that there's a curiosity, mm-hmm. right? Even though maybe they don't know, but again, the subconscious,
yeah.
there's a curious thing there that maybe, let's see.
Yeah. Well, I do believe, and this may be a bit optimistic, but I do believe that most humans do have a desire to get a little better. You know, I mean, maybe not be like world renowned, but just to improve, to get a little bit better. That until the day comes to where we just like, okay, I'm done. I'm just going to sit and watch TV all day. You know, until that day, that there's a little bit in us that wants to do something a little bit better for self-improvement, for personal growth. They may not call it that, but they have that desire. You know, I would just like to be able to talk to my kids better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're growing up and I don't know how to relate to them. You know, they would be really great if I knew how to do that better. You know, so it's something in their life, you know, that would be great. And they can't figure out how to do it on their own. Yeah, and that's where we come in. And mostly because exactly what you're saying, Sydney Marie, they're stuck in their past stories. Well, that's who I was as a dad before. Why don't they accept me as a dad now? You know?
And so. That, sorry, go on. You're about to
no,
say
no,
something.
No, you go.
Yeah, because you mentioned about the past self. Would you agree with this observation that I have that many people, perhaps the reason why, unable to shift their, if we can call it identity, to what they truly desire, is because of the projection that they have kept with their own title, positions, mm-hmm. and like what you said earlier as your story, you'd rather be in the same familiar side to be comfortable, that you know, even though you don't change, you know what's going to happen repetitively. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it always curious me, like, why, and I've learned this from your book, The Discomfort Zone, don't mm-hmm. ask people why, because it triggers mm-hmm. them. I'm like, okay, well then, and you mentioned what, how, and when, something like that. And I'm a very curious person. I always ask people something with why, because I think as a, you know, when you're a child, you're very yeah. curious and you always start your question with why, right? Mm-hmm. And anyway, my question is all about this projection. Do you think mm-hmm. that it has something with the projection also, why many people prefer not to change into something that they truly desire?
First, let me just clear up, you know, the why question is mostly when you ask about an action, why did you do that? That's threatening, you know, but if you were to say, so why do you think this is occurring? That's different.
Okay.
You know, so if I'm asking you about your thinking, you know, why do you think that that's happening that way? What, you know, brought you to that belief? That's not quite as threatening. So it's not that the why questions
okay,
are
great
never
to know.
Used. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
just
I mean,
don't
the
say, why did you do that?
Yes, yes, yes. The reason
yeah.
why, before I let you continue, sorry to cut you, I've experienced that. And because I'm in the lifelong learning journey, when I read that, I was like, oh. And then I started to ask myself, did I ask something a very straight on, why did you do that? And I realized, no, now you explain it further. No, actually, I asked exactly what you have mentioned. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's funny. So if we step back and we look at what is your brain's primary purpose, you know, we often talk about we have a primitive brain, a cognitive brain, a creative brain. But that primitive brain, that brain that's activated first in any situation, is there to keep us safe. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the primary purpose of the brain, not to make you wise, not to, you know, create great things in life. It's to first keep you safe. So even when you walk into a room of people, your brain's saying, what is the safest place for me to sit? You know, you look around and mm-hmm. Without consciously doing it, you choose it. You know, and so we choose safety. Even if you're a risk taker, the only reason that you are comfortable with it is because you've taken risks and realize there's not a lot of consequence. So the brain says, okay, I guess it's safe. Mm-hmm. So that's why, you know, and uncertainty is a very unsafe place to be, because I don't know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And so the brain is saying to you, no, don't do it. Don't do it. You know, one of the most powerful but simple questions that you can ask in coaching is, so if you were to try this, what are the consequences? What's the worst that could happen? What else could happen? That seems so obvious, yet we don't do that on our own, you know, because it's not likely that the worst is going to happen. And even if it did, what would you then do? You know, so if I ask that and the person says, oh, well, you know, it could be a total flop, I said, well, what would you do next? Oh, well, then I would just go do something else. You know, it's just that the brain almost stops you from considering that. It has to be somebody external, what we call an external thought disruptor, that asks you those questions in a way that you could actually answer them that you can't do for yourself. So that's one of the reasons why we stay in the comfortable, ineffective past instead of moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah. So moving to accepting oneself and appreciating others in leadership. Mm-hmm. So Marsha, why do you think it is so crucial to embrace and value yourself while also showing appreciation for others in leadership?
Yeah. You know, they're connected and they're not. You know, so when we look at, I've even come to question the word lately, acceptance.
Mm.
Because if I'm just accepting myself, then I'm saying something's wrong with me. I'm accepting my imperfections. You know, and I even for this, when looking at what do I want to change for this year,
mm-hmm.
I said, I'm not going to say that about myself anymore. I accept myself the way I am. Oh, forget it. I just am who I am, you know, and can I just move forward with that and not use that word acceptance? You know, so can I just be comfortable and appreciate who I am in this moment? Mm. If I don't do that, it comes out in my energy, my lack of confidence. You know, my voice isn't as strong. I might tend not to speak up or to say something that might trigger someone else. You know, so it's going to impact the depth of the conversation I have with others. So that actually comes first. Mm-hmm. That I then appreciate that the leader's doing the best they can with what they know. I may not like what they're doing, but I think at this point they're doing the best they can with what they know. Can I come to at least appreciate that? You know, that's the only way that I can be with them in a good conversation, is to have a good sense of myself, of who I am in this moment, and to appreciate that they're on their journey and they may be, you know, here and they may be here. If they're open to a conversation with me, I can help them move forward. If they're not, then they won't. So, yeah.
And you mentioned at the present moment, I think mm-hmm. many of us neglect the importance of being in the moment, being in the now. And many of us, I don't know how to explain this, but once you thought about something, you would come to 100 steps already instead of slowing things down. Like, this is where we are right now. And I felt like many of us not appreciating the present moment because we neglect the importance of even understanding the present and the now. And I think that's also one of the biggest reasons why many people feel disappointed and having the anxiety. Do you agree on that?
Well, I'm not so sure. Yes, their perception is going to create disappointment, anxiety, but it doesn't for everyone. But that in I cannot interpret my present moment without something from the past. When I look out my window and I see a tree, I'm seeing it in the present moment, but the only reason I know it's a tree is because of what I've learned in the past. Otherwise, it's just this big green thing that has stuff on the end. <You know? laughs> So there's no way that I can fully get away from the past because that's how helps me define the moment. True. So when we say presence, what I am really meaning is not forgetting the past and the future and just thinking about the present moment. That's just not, I don't believe that's possible. That presence is a physical thing. So when I'm coaching or even in conversation with you, I'm not really thinking a lot. All right. So it's coming from my well of wisdom, which is really in my gut. You know, that especially when I'm coaching, I'm just receiving what you're giving me. I'm receiving. Yes. I'm not just listening. I'm receiving your words and your expressions. And then I want to offer it back without thinking about it. I don't have to think about, well, will this bother you if I say this? Well, it might. So what? We'll move on from there. You know? So the presence, it's more of a full body, you know, nervous system experience than just a cognitive experience. But even that, what I pull in and, you know, through my heart and my gut, which is my nervous system, it still has to translate or spark into my brain so I can translate it into words. Because there's no translation in that part of the nervous system. Your translator's up in your brain. So it's still going to run through some filters of my bias in my past, no matter what. But if I can do my best just to share back with you exactly what you just, you know, expressed to me without interpretation, then that's the best presence that I can bring to our conversation. You know, so that, you know, if I sit and I'm quiet and I meditate and, you know, I'm just in my body and not in my brain, that's a different experience. But that's a soul experience. That's not out in conversation with others. If I'm out hiking in the desert, you know, which is just a block away from me, and I may be just experiencing the beauty of this desert that we have, and right now it's just raining and I'm fully present with that. But if somebody comes by walking their dog, then I'm immediately like, you know, that dog needs to be on a leash. You know, or that's a pretty dog, you know, I'm instantly back into somewhat thinking. So it's not can I be in this moment with the least amount of judgment and interpretation that's possible? Because judgment and interpretation always comes from our past, or possibly the fear of the future. Yeah.
I love that. I love that. I love that because, yes, that is totally true. And it's so interesting you share some examples, and it also broadened my perspective in a sense that you can have that bias when you get destruction, if my understanding is correct. And when you have a lot of, let's say, projects on your plate that you're required to attend. And does that relate to being mindful and having that strong connection with your inner awareness?
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's something our coach training gives us, that is self-awareness.
Yes.
You know, and often that's the goal in coaching, is to expand someone's self-awareness, not to reach their goal. If you expand their self-awareness, they see what to do to reach their goal on their own. You know, so my goal is just to expand their awareness of self and situation. So part of the coaching is to bring that self-awareness in this moment. But me and my work as a coach is to be aware throughout the day, what am I feeling? What am I choosing? And there's your word, why, and why.
Yes, I love that. And I think self-awareness, in my perspective, and has really changed when I entered coaching, is one, if not really the most powerful investment that you could ever give to achieve your highest self. And this leads to my next question in terms of growth mindset. Now, if I may share with you a little bit of my experience in my corporate works, I have noticed a preference for leaders for, or this approach of a yes, sir, or a yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. Approach. I think you would, maybe you would hear that from people in the Philippines, and or it's a common terms for leaders that don't want people to grow. Anyway, that actually impacting the support, the trust, and openness to bold and creative ideas. Not only it impacts the professional growth, but also personal life. So my question to you, Marcia, how does it cultivating growth mindset contribute to successful leadership?
You know, you have to then look at growth mindset. You know, I'm not sure how that relates to what you were saying about, you know, constantly acknowledging position. But for us to have a growth or a learner mindset, it's just an open mind. You know, it's like, it's just to be able to say, if there was something else I'm not seeing, what would that be? If I didn't know in this moment, what might I discover? You know, and so to be open. And again, because the brain doesn't like uncertainty, the brain doesn't particularly, you know, with that, because I need to know the answers. And a lot of leaders feel it's their job to know the answers and to be the smartest one in the room.
Yes.
But if that's the case, and they close themselves off to learning, and you know, one thing I knew in my last job, you know, I ran the corporate training, but at one point they gave me the factory training. And they would always come to me and ask me, you know, so what should we do? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know your job at all. You know, I'm happy to have a conversation with you about the options you have and what might work, but I'm not going to tell you what to do. You know, and they would always like, oh, okay. And I don't think they lost respect for me. I was still their boss, you know. And I think that they appreciate that even more, that I said, well, you've been doing this for years. You're in the trenches every day. I've only been in the factory twice in the 5 years I've been here. Why would I know the answer? You know, and the farther you go up in leadership, the less you would know what people do and have all the answers for them. So, you know, that comes back to who are you as a leader? You know, and so I often with leaders, I don't ask them, what are you doing that's not working? I say, define to me what leadership is to you.
Yes.
You know, and then what do you think the people that work for you, how would they define leadership? What about your colleagues, the other leaders in this organization? Let's look at the different definitions of leadership that are walking the hallways of this company.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how does yours fit in with that bigger picture? And if you're not getting what you want, you know, what kind of, how would you change your definition of leadership? You know, so if you feel like people aren't really listening to you and they're not doing what you say, okay. So you're the kind of leader that tells them what to do. So if they're not doing what you say, what else is possible? What kind of leader might be more effective in that situation? You know, I often coach more on the who. Who are you? Yeah. And this picture you want to create, who could you become? I think that's even more powerful than what are you doing, what's working, what doesn't work. And that's just problem solving to me.
Yeah. I love that when you mentioned, like, I wish I could have you as my boss, because my experience was totally different because I'm a very bold risk taker person and very vocal when things I feel like there's something that I could contribute, and I've been shut up. And I felt like at that time I was also a people pleaser. So I've been burning myself out to prove. Now I felt like I'm being called to serve other leaders or aspiring leaders as well, who you want to become, because that's important as we increase exactly. And so, and my husband's working in a corporate world, so I can hear some of
it hasn't changed. Well, you know, it's so funny because my boss was like that. He was always telling me what to do, and I'm thinking, you know what, I've had two more degrees than you and more experience doing this than you do, and you're telling me what to do, fine. You know, and then we'd get into arguing about things, and he always thought I was just trouble. And then one day I just said, okay, I'm not going to argue. I'm just going to, whatever he says, whatever. So I sat there. It was actually a performance review, and he just talked, and I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. And he says, wow, you've grown so much. I'm thinking, I just lost even more respect for you that you think I'm even better just because I'm not talking and I'm not giving my ideas, you know? So he had no clue. All he wanted was to be the expert, you know, and to prove to me he could do that. And it was so interesting when I left that job, and you know, he thought I was crazy. I did leave a lot of money on the table, but it was time to go. And you know, 2 years later, I saw him. He says to me, "Are you really suffering?" And I'm like, "No." Well, someday I'm going to do what you did. I'm going to write books and do what you did. And I'm thinking, no, you're not. You are stuck in the safety of this, you know, company with your salary and who you think you are. You're never going to leave that, you know. And frankly, he didn't until he got to some things physically happened to him, and he had to take disability. Yeah, I think, you know, this, all that stuff just drove him in the ground while I'm flourishing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It was
That's
crazy.
The unfortunate of story that many of us fall into a critical tragedy to make changes.
Oh. Right. Oh, I love that. Yeah, the tragedy of staying stuck. Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I'm more committed. We are so passionate of creating more of awareness about the power of coaching, not only for the better, but also for the best. And to lead to the next questions, you mentioned earlier optimistic. I love that because I'm also a person with optimism. And with the increase of demands of requests, especially nowadays, everyone working and online and invitations that you're getting, a personal task. I'm super curious, Marsha, how do you keep yourself optimistic? Do you have kind of like morning and night routine? If so, could you share with us?
Okay. So first, I'm going to say something that you may not like. I'm not an optimist.
Okay.
So, you know, what a lot of people don't recognize, they often think that, you know, there's optimist and pessimist. But in the middle is realist. I'm a realist. So I may be optimistic about certain things that I believe that this is, you know, it's possible that this could happen. So I may be optimistic about, my new book coming out, okay? But I'm much more of a realist of looking at what's truly going on right now, how that's really impacting everything. And I don't think the worst is going to happen, but I think that it's really important we look at what is true. And so I think optimism is good in some situations, but not all. And I've seen people that, you know, live just in optimism and then get like trip, you know, because they're not seeing the reality of the situation. They're believing in people way too much, you know, and it's like, well, wait a second. What's the evidence that you have that that's going to really turn out that way?
The action.
You know? So, yeah. So I believe that it's and that's what I do with coaching. It's like, how do you know that to be true? You know, what's really the situations here, you know, and what's the likelihood that that will happen? You know, and if that does, what will you do next? I think it's really important that we look at that. So no, I don't do anything to try to be optimistic.
Okay. I love that because, you know, just like you, I think, why can't we combine being realist and optimist? Because that brings hope to people. And and someone from the spiritual journey or teaching told me about something that you can request, you can make a wish, and just allow the man to give you whatever you wish. And I said, well, I will disagree on that because I don't think things will get to you in front of you without you working. So I'm a big believer that you have to move.
It's not going to just show up on your doorstep.
Exactly.
But not likely. Yeah. You have to really, and it often doesn't turn out like you expect, you know?
True.
And so, okay. So that's the way it turned out. Well, how will I deal with it now? You know? So, you know, it's interesting. Even the word hope, Margaret Wheatley, who writes amazing books, and she for years doesn't even like the word hope because she says on the other side of hope is fear. She said, you know, and if you look, I can remember in my doctoral program, we were researching love addiction. And they said the reason why people stay in bad relationships is when they still have hope. The moment they lose hope, they'll leave, you know. And so you have to be careful about, you know, using hope as a way of not seeing the truth.
The truth, yes.
Yeah. So, yes, there's plenty of times that, you know, I hope this will turn out well, you know, and let me look at if it doesn't, what will I do?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I think I would agree that I guess for me, it's I'm in combination of being realistic that it has some work to get some results that you aspire to become. And I'm guessing that as you learning more and more and doing this researching, understanding how we learn and grow, you sort of have that kind of resources and tools that allow you to be present and also being, you know, the wholeness within you that keep you serving people in the great essence of yourself. So maybe you can share with us what are those tools or resources that you do for the past whatever years that really help you, that many people that might be listening or watching or listening right now would find it very interesting to experiment. Because I'm a big believer that if you really want to keep on growing, keep trying something else and what works for you, because one formula doesn't fit all. It's the same thing with health. I've been doing a lot of health checkup and many people just advise me take these pills and my body doesn't say so. And so I'm listening to what my body is saying. So I'm really curious if you have something, tools or modalities or resources that you can share with us that could help other people to become the better leader as for themselves.
I'm not a person of routine, other than I do work out every morning. And the older I get, And the more important it is that I have good nutrition and health so I can keep going and doing all this at my age. So I would say that's the only routines I have is my physical health.
Yes.
But I've always had a value for learning, and so I appreciate that. Not everybody does. But it's not like I don't read books, but I read research, and I'm constantly, and I listen and I evaluate. I don't just argue with people. I want to hear what they have to say. You know, I see, like yesterday, I connected with somebody on LinkedIn, and I thought it was really interesting, the work he was doing. So I met with him and had him explain it to me, you know, just to see, well, that's interesting. I never thought about studying that. Maybe I'll study that, you know. And so my curiosity, my value for learning and my curiosity, I think, keeps me going. You know, but you, I think stepping back, all the stuff that we do around values, you know, to really understand what are my top value, life values,
yes.
and is my life in alignment with that? And what are my bottom values, and make sure that I don't care if, even if people judge me, that I don't care about that, that I just acknowledge, I don't care about that, you know, and not worry about if I should or I shouldn't, because I just don't. So I think understanding my top and my bottom values are really critical, and that I'm living in alignment with that. So, like I said, I feel I'm glad that I was brought up in a home environment where school and learning was really critical. So it was embedded in me is that this is a great thing, and to question, which is a part of my culture, you know, like to really question, not just accept what people are saying. So let me try to understand that better. But that's a part of my, you know, my being.
Yes.
And it just so happened that's a good thing. But for each person, you know, what is it that's most important to you in life? You know, and not what people tell you, you know, what you need from other people, acknowledgement, respect, and all of that. That's a social need. That's what you need from other people. But what is it that you need to give yourself? That's important, you know. So for me, like I said, there's learning, there's curiosity, there's I need to be in an environment that I think is beautiful. Now, not all people see the desert as beautiful, but I do, you know. And this is my office. People always say, "Is that a fake background?" I'm like, "No, this is my office." You know, I like things to be a certain way and pretty. You know, and I have a beautiful view out my kitchen window. You know, that's really important to me. And so those things that are most important to you, you must have that in your life, or life's going to feel unsettled. You know, so finding that, I know there's an online survey, the VIA, the Values in Action. If people look for that on the internet, they'll find that there's, you know, a survey you can do that helps you identify your top values. I recommend that.
I love that. I love that. If you could share with us the link to that, that will be really, really great, because I know my core values, and I love you mentioned that because over time, as I evolve, I really see the beauty of sticking with my core values, and it really helps me to be, you know, rolling, moving to the person I want to become. And I love you also mentioned that the opinions, whatever the feed, not feedback, constructive feedback, but the criticism, all of this negativity that doesn't serve me. I'm just like, no, thank you. But I understand that this is not my core value.
You know, I don't have a value for family. I don't have a big family. We're not that connected, and that's fine. I have, you know, my friends are my family. Yeah. And a lot of people are like, well, what'd you do over the holidays? You get you with your family. I'm like, thank God, no. I had a nice quiet time to do work. So, you know, we know yourself, what's important to you, not what other people say should be important to you.
I love that. Love, love, love that. I think it's really knowing yourself and your core values. And for many people watching and listening right now, Marsha, first of all, thank you for this opportunity of reminding myself and the rest of the people the importance of values. I think the busyness of the life that we are creating, unfortunately, this, you know, isolating us for what truly is important. And where can they find you and how they can grab your new breakthrough coaching book?
Ah, great. Thank you. Well, my website is covisioning.com, one word, covisioning. And, you know, there is a link to all my books. If you just do books, you'll see all of them. And then there's links to, you know, Amazon. And the book Breakthrough Coaching, the launch date is January 30th. I should get my copies today. I was supposed to get them weeks ago. I can't wait. You know, some people have already gotten theirs. They pre-ordered and they've gotten them already.
Oh, wow.
And I don't even have mine.
Oh, that's so interesting.
So, yeah. Well, they were ordered directly from the publisher. So, but then you can see all of them, all the books. And I'll give you, you know, some links about values. I have a chart on my website as well as the link to the survey. So I'll give you that as well.
Beautiful, beautiful. And Marsha, before I let you go, for this 2024, and it's very fast, we are already on the 11th of January.
Yeah.
Can you believe that? What is your powerful or even thought-provoking question that you would like to leave for people and watching right now that might have a little bit of fear to stepping into the unknown, even though that could be the possible step for them to do now at this moment?
Yeah. Well, you know, to really look at, there was something over the holidays where they said, it's not just about letting go of the past, it's about just forgetting it. What is it you want to forget so that will allow you to become your best self?
Oh, so great. So short, so precise, but so powerful. Thank you. Thank you so much, Marsha, for this episode that you have allowed us to have a deeper conversation with you. And for anybody outside out there watching and listening right now, and you find it very, very powerful, feel free to share it to people. The more, the merrier, so we can empower and transform more people's lives. And until next time, with yours truly, Cindy Marie, here to empower your life. Thank you, Marsha.
Oh, thank you.
The power of letting go, forgetting the past self or past, keep moving forward to become the best version of yourself, and continuously reconnecting with your true core values. Oh, I love the conversations I have with Dr. Marsha Reynolds. So my question to you, what is the tiny step that you can take from today onwards, little by little, that will unfold the best version of yourself? Share your comments below. And for our show to grow organically, hit the subscribe button, hit the follow button, and share with others so that we can bring more incredible thought leaders that could transform and empower more people's lives. Until next time, remember to stay optimistic, reconnect with your true core values, stay on your game, keep taking action, and believe in yourself, because you've got what it takes to achieve your dreams and make an impact on this planet. Be unstoppable.